Can we walk this road together? I can't travel it alone. I need someone beside me to help me find my way back home.
Hello, this is Dan Prinzen, Executive Director of the Wasmuth Center for Human Rights in Boise with Adam Thompson.
Hey there.
Welcome to Voices of Idaho. Today we're talking with Francisco Salinas, Director of Student Diversity and Inclusion at Boise State University. Thank you for joining us today, Francisco.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Well, certainly diversity has been a topic at Boise State campus, and certainly your role as a part of an advocate for diversity and inclusion has been a topic.
Absolutely, it has. You know, I mean, honestly, it's always a topic in my daily work. You know, when people take notice, that's an opportunity for us. I think we have presented to us really an opportunity to clarify some things and to help people understand what the nature of the work really is.
You know, I think you've just hit on what has always been so core to the Wasmuth Center. It's education.
Yeah.
People don't know what they don't know.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, part of the discussion is framed in ways that are simply untrue or just incorrect. And so what we want to do is we want to bring light to those misunderstandings, and where there are genuine ideological disagreements, explore what the meaning of those are.
Well, that is certainly what we have attempted to do in framing our whole programming on the spiral of injustice. It helps to create a model. Can we understand how injustice devolves in a community? It does not evolve, it right. devolves. Something is
yes.
out of control.
Absolutely.
Is there peace, when you look at the spiral, is there a peace that speaks to you or out of your own experience that really helps to frame for discussion?
Absolutely. You know, the language piece, the nature of de-evolution that you describe, what we want to do is help students understand the power of language. We exercise in language all the time. Clearly, there is a connection between emotionality, language choice, right, and what eventually become ideas and maybe ideologies and actions. And so what we want to do is we want to help students clarify the way that emotions are feeding into their language choices, and we often do that, and we help students to understand the implications of language choices, things with certain connotations rather than other connotations. And historically, we can see, I mean, that what you've got, the spiral of injustice, it's proven through history, right? You don't find, I mean, even in the recent tragic action in El Paso, what took place there, and I know that there are different interpretations of the connection between the dehumanizing language aimed at immigrants and the action of this lone actor and its connection to the larger context. But what you can't escape is that spiral's description of the way that this works. The dehumanizing language is key.
I think that's always been the piece that frightens me, if we don't recognize the power in words.
Absolutely.
If we don't recognize that what can devolve from that language.
Yeah.
We've used the model of the spiral of injustice. I can teach about the Holocaust with that, or I can talk about contemporary events.
Yes.
The key is to see there is a pattern.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's definitely a pattern. You know, here we are on formerly native land, right? And one of the things that I've been looking at recently is the way that we serve native students. Serving native students means we have to figure out how to effectively build relationships with native communities, right? Well, education has a broken relationship with native communities in the West because of what we did in what were known as Indian schools, right? And those schools were meant to indoctrinate and exterminate. And language was a big part of that, right? How things were framed.
A prime example, even in our own programming, here we're talking about language, but often when we're referencing the final level in the spiral is elimination. And actually, the model that we put in the Marilyn Schuler Classroom for Human Rights, one of the videos, it was the elimination of Native identity because of those residential schools.
Absolutely.
Stripping away a cultural identity.
Yes, and some of those physical structures are still standing in the state of Idaho. You can go and tour them, and you can hear stories from people who are actually survivors of that experience.
I think that's why we had to frame in our model, contrary to other models in social justice education, is we don't go straight to genocide. We talked in terms of elimination because I can eliminate you without killing you.
Yes.
It is not a physical gender. I can strip your identity away. I can strip your culture away.
Absolutely. And that really, I mean, interesting you said that was kind of the aim of those schools, yes. Right? Not genocide necessarily, but sort of transformation away from fundamentally who you were.
So how do we reinforce, let's look on the campus. Mm-hmm. So we're bringing in a diverse student body. Mm-hmm. How do we reinforce the commonality of our shared experiences?
I think it's through dialogue. I think it's through dialogue and understanding. You know, there's a book I used to use by Richard Schaefer in which he talked about prejudice being inversely related to proximity to folks, right? And stereotypes. When you are, and this is something I've recognized as a blessing of my own career path over time, is that stereotypes don't grow for me because I have such a diverse group of students. And so whereas somebody from rural Idaho who has not gone to the university, has not exposed themselves to different kinds of people, might not have actual lived experience building relationship with somebody from the Muslim faith. I have long-standing relationships with students, and so I know the stereotypes defy my own experience with these individual people, and I defy anybody not to fall in love with students once they serve them, you know, and it is hard to have those stereotypes grow with folks that you care for.
This is Diesel Messenjev's A Suppleness of Life. Notice the world, the subtle contours, the radiance of a sunset, cast among pines and spring rain. Supple amber beams warm the land, and the earth blooms with grace. Consider the dry ground as a summer bakes the landscape, producing a delicate pastry. Sprinkled with dirt and dry grass, insects burrow, hollowing the soil to a husk. A temperature drops, accompanying the leaves brought down by the tide of autumn. The rustling landscape flakes away and is blanketed with sleep. Turn. Feel the wind rising, tearing away the tension. The grounds charged, broken by the thousand worries let go in a moment of peace. Soar, through your mind's eye and see the universe as a whole, unified. Land, and through landing find yourself and in yourself become aware of the world. And in the empty toil in which we exist, searching for the meaning of life, when the only one there is the meaning we give it. To find meaning in life, the finest privilege. For spiritual pursuit, the very fabric of our sentience, and the peace as a way of personal finding are intrinsically necessary to the pursuit of happiness.
Relationships that grow from the folks that you know. Fundamental with it, so many of the voices that we have been working with on the podcast have talked about the power of relationship once I come to know you as a person.
Yeah.
Once we step beyond whatever the concept that I may have had about you without even knowing you.
Absolutely. Yes.
So that, to me, leads us to our discussion and our role of how do we foster upstanders. Mm-hmm. Now, for us, an upstander, someone who is willing to step up, speak out when they witness or hear injustice.
Right.
How do we do that campus-wide? How do we foster a community of upstanders?
Well, I think, you know, one of the great quotes that I admire that somebody spoke about with reference to Dr. King, and it was one of that they said that Dr. King's fundamental challenge was to make us recognize that the best thing we can make out of our enemy is a friend, right? And that is a really hard standard to live up to if somebody dehumanizes you for the purpose of eliminating you. And if you know that's going on, that is really hard to do, but it's still worth trying to do. So at the center of what you're talking about, figuring out how to be an upstander is recognizing our common humanity, right? That I am inextricably bound to the people that I share the planet with, and that which hurts me can also hurt them. That which hurts them can also hurt me. And so I need to recognize that humanity and center it in fundamental love for one another. That's why even when I disagree with some folks on different sides of the ideological spectrum, I recognize them as my sisters and my brothers and the others that are part of the human family that are indispensable to our common cause.
You know, Prince, I've often thought one of the hallmarks of being a democracy is we don't all have to agree.
Absolutely.
But we can have respectful dialogue.
Yes. Yes, we can have respectful dialogue centered in fundamental love for humanity.
What is at our core? Mm-hmm. We share a community. I always have gone back to the JFA quote, you know, we all breathe the same air, we all drink the same water.
Absolutely.
You know, what ties us together with it. And somewhere we have to learn how to live together.
Yeah. Yeah.
That we are going to share this experience together. And ultimately, don't we all want it better for each other?
Yes, absolutely. And I think, you know, the notion that we are separate is a flawed notion. Yes. We are not separate. We are tied together in common cause. What happens to my water happens to your water. And what happens to my air happens to your air. And, you know, thereby, what happens to my freedom happens to your freedom.
It makes me think, for years we worked with Rose Beal, Holocaust survivor, that she would talk about the importance of standing up for one another, protecting the rights that I want for myself, that I would want for others, because at any moment, any of us could lose them. Mm-hmm. And so we work collectively to preserve them.
Yep.
It's what we share. It's what we owe each other as a community. You know, Rose was such a phenomenal docent in the memorial because her story was so real. And she pulled from a lot of the quotes that were in the memorial to help frame her experience. Is there a particular quote that speaks to you?
Absolutely. You've got a quote by Dick Gregory, who is known as a comedian. His quote is, "What black folks are given in the U.S. on the installment plan, as in civil rights bills, not to be confused with human rights, which are dignity, stature, humanity, respect, and freedom belonging to all people by right of their birth."
All people. Mm-hmm. It's why, in the Voices of Idaho, we will continue to echo, "Not in my town, not in my state, Idaho is too great for hate." Thank you for joining us today, Francisco.
Thanks so much for having me. Thanks for the work you do.
With you right here beside me, we'll find our home with peace again.
One thing that I've noticed, especially speaking with people, is once they can open up and talk to somebody who they first think is on their side, they relax, they talk, everything flows well. But in my case, when they come to the resolution or the realization that I'm Muslim, they're shocked because, number one, they've never spoken to a Muslim one-on-one before. And that commonality that we have as two people living in Idaho, loving Idaho, enjoying Idaho, kind of flies in the face of everything they think about Muslims. Like, well, wait a minute, Muslims are something foreign or something strange or something exotic or something that I don't know.
Oh, I know all about them because I've watched TV.
Exactly. So it's that the need for that personal connection.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of the Wasp Center podcast. That clip you just heard was with Philip Thompson, the executive director of the Idaho Black History Museum. That episode will be airing December 9th, so check it out then. The Voices of Idaho is created by Dan Prenzing and produced and edited by me, Adam Thompson. We'll see you in 2 weeks.